Hey guys, good morning, and I'm sure you guys can see it now. The first horseman of the apocalypse, a rider on a white horse with a corona and a toxic weapon. That's right, Revelation chapter 6, a rider on a white horse, white symbolizing the medical profession, a corona, that's a crown, corona, and the word, the Greek word, because the New Testament was written in Koine Greek, the word for bow is toxon. Rider on a white horse with a toxic corona weapon, going out conquering and to conquer. Guys, this has already happened. Second horseman of the apocalypse. We're seeing it right now. We're in it. We're in it. We're in it. World War III has started, and you're seeing it unfold right now. Right now, the belligerents, the sides are being formed. It's like not the guns of August, but maybe the guns of November, December, I don't know, but it's all coming together. Belarus is with Russia. China is with Russia. Saudi Arabia just abandoned us. They're joining Russia. Don't be surprised if you see Serbia join Russia. Don't be surprised when Bosnia joins Russia. Turkey is with Russia. Guys, it's just like the 90 days that led up to the outbreak of World War I when all the sides congealed together, the various belligerents in that war. It's all happening right now. And so for those of you who said this is not going to happen, or this is impossible, or it'll resolve itself, that's what CNN was saying a few months ago, right? Pull your head out of the sand and get a reality check here. Guys, we're in it. And you need to really think and be praying about what you should be doing right now. So, because this is a biblical proportion. This is not just a regional conflict. And it's not something that is merely political and economic. There's a spiritual component to this too, and that is the judgment of God is manifesting upon this earth in a way that was precisely predicted in the book of Revelation. So the second horseman of the apocalypse, a rider on a red horse. I'm giving you my view, guys. So the red army has invaded red Russia. So red Russia is Ukraine. White Russia is Belarus, white Russia. So the ancient Nordic people told the direction of the compass by colors. So white is the north, okay? Red is the south. It's also black Russia. And anyway, so the red rider on a red horse, and to him it is given a great sword, and that peace should be taken from the earth, that men should slay one another. And the word for sword there is really a dagger. It says great sword, but there is no such thing as a great dagger. It's a paradox. But Russia has a weapon system called the Kinjal, which the English designation for that is the dagger. And it is a weapon system we don't have that is looking to me like it's going to be very critical in the prosecution of this war, hypersonic missiles, and which we don't have any deployed. Guys, we're at an extreme disadvantage tactically and strategically, but most of all spiritually, and I'll get to that in a second. So that is the second horseman of the apocalypse, the rider on a red horse. The third horseman of the apocalypse, and it is right around the corner. It's already happening. It's already, you know, these horsemen start to ride, then they start to gallop, I think. But they're all in motion right now. I want you to look at this. So the rider on a third horse, okay, it's a rider on a black horse, and he has a pair of scales in his hands. And it says, a voice says, a quart of wheat for a denarius or a day's wage, or three quarts of barley for a denarius or a day's wage. This is food price inflation. This is food scarcity. This is an economic collapse and severe shortages. Guys, can't you see the coronavirus bioweapon, the non-vaccine vaccines, going out conquering and to conquer? Can't you see the world war that's developing? We're in it. We're in it. And can't you see the economic collapse and what's happening to the price of food? What are the odds of these three things happening exactly concurrently with each other? And the fourth horseman of the apocalypse, it says, is a rider on a green horse. Now, the Greek word, because the New Testament was written in Koine Greek, is the word chloros. Wow, that is telling. Who could have predicted there'd be a green movement that would be all about depopulation? But God has told you, because he loves you and he cares about you and he wants you to pull your head out of the sand if that's where it's been, and just and look and see. First of all, pray that God open your eyes, guys. Pray that God open your eyes And I'm not trying to be condescending here, but I wish I could shake people sometimes and make them see, because when I first started making these videos, people were, oh, it's just your opinion. It's skeptical, you know, and that's, I tolerate people have other opinions and all that. It's fine. But guys, I'm just sharing with you. You're here because you want to hear what I'm thinking, and this is what I'm thinking and seeing. So I'm gonna do probably four videos on four different. I'm gonna switch the kind of direction of things a little bit here, because I think it's going to edify you and give you a greater view to see some of the things that are happening and some of the things that God is doing. And first of all, let me get to this that. I said the spiritual aspect. Guys, back in the old, empires come and they go. Nations are lifted up and nations are brought down. And God is the one who does this. And because he rules the nations. And so, guys, check this out. Back in a time in history, you can read about it in the Bible. There was an evil king and an evil queen, Ahab and Jezebel. And what happened was, basically, the whole country entered into a drought. Many, many people died, starved to death. There was famine. People, they were even doing cannibalism. The famine was so bad. But it was the judgment of God. And there was a prophet named Elijah who spoke truth to power. And he went and gave a prophetic message to the king, Ahab, the politician. Okay, and so he took his faith out of the church, synagogue, or whatever, you know, and went and engaged the world he lived in the political realm. And he spoke this truth. And one of the things that caused the judgment of God, the main thing actually that caused the judgment of God to occur back then and virtually destroy the entire nation, except always, God tends to always save a remnant, is that the people were causing their children to pass through the fire. That means this became a culture. The culture, it started out very well under Moses and all that. You know, they worshiped God, and God brought them into this promised land. And then they fell away from God, turned to other gods, and they began to sacrifice their children and made them pass through the fire on the altar of Baal. And guys, I'm telling you, this country right now is a country that makes its children pass through under the knife. We're making our children pass under the knife with genital mutilation. And the Democrats, I'm going to call them out, these Democrats like Gavin Newsom, the pusillanimous dictator, who advocate killing children even after they're born, up to 30 days after they're born. I'm telling you, God has something to say about this. And we are about to witness the most convincing evangelistic work that could ever happen. God, for decades in this country, has tried to get people to come, I guess you could say peacefully, voluntarily. You know, if you want to follow Jesus, if you want to come to the Lord, you've had the opportunity. But now he's going to prove that he reigns and he rules over the nations. The time is up. And this is a nation that's made its children pass under the knife. And dark times are coming. And so, guys, I want to now I want to go off in a little bit different direction and speak some things that I think are going to encourage you and give you a different view to some things. Because we have been isolated here in the West for so many years and have not been, we haven't experienced what most other people in the world experience in terms of oppression and scarcity, persecution, and all kinds of troubles. But I'm going to take you back. I started speaking about the relationship with God. And so I have to tell you about, well, just how this has worked out for me, okay? So I'll skip the part where I was a troubled teen and came to faith in Christ, when received Jesus Christ, and the Lord manifested his presence to me. And it just, when that happened, I just went, I said, I have to go all in for Jesus, all in. And so, and there's a part of walking with the Lord, there's a part of your relationship with God that is absolutely objective. And that is the Bible. It's the Word of God. It's inerrant. It can't be changed. It's Jesus said it's easier for heaven and earth to pass away than for one jot or tittle to pass away. So that is objective truth. However, there's also this subjective aspect of your relationship with God, and that is how you walk and how you move, because the Lord promises to fill you with His Holy Spirit and give you direction, and He puts you in a process of making you more like Him. And working out some stuff, working out your salvation with fear and trembling, it says, work it out. And the Greek word there is phobos, by the way. It's heavy stuff. But so at this young age, I decided that I had to just go all in for Jesus. And so I understood the objective part. The Bible's true, and I'm all about that. But I needed direction from the Lord. I said, Lord, You saved me for a reason, and please, now show me what to do with my life. You know, I noticed that all my peers were going to school. They were going to go study for 4 years, 8 years, 6 years, whatever. And then they were going to work for 40 years. Then they were going to retire. And then they were going to die. That's just how I saw it. I thought, I am not going that route. And so I fasted and prayed, because I understood from reading the Bible that that's what people do. And so that's what I did. And I fasted and prayed and said, Lord, please show me what to do. What should I do now that you've manifested Your presence in my life, and I need direction, Lord? And that's not the specific type of direct. Now I'm talking about subjective truth, okay, that you can get from just the Bible. You need the living relationship with God, right? So in this dream, in this week of prayer and fasting, I had a dream, and I'm taking you back. This is 1983, okay, guys? And I'm taking you back to a time when two-thirds of the world was under communism. I want you to think about that. Two-thirds of the world were basically prisoners in their own country. China alone is one-third, right? And then the Soviet Union and all the satellite countries, not even to speak of the communist revolutions that were occurring in Africa, Central America, and other places. I mean, two-thirds of the world was under communism. And now, I had never been to a communist country back then. But in this week of seeking the Lord, I had a dream. And in the dream, I saw a map. And it was a map, I recognized it was a map of Southeastern Europe. And I'd never been there, but in the map, I saw the borders, disappeared. And then I saw like wallet-sized photographs of people appearing on the map. Then the map went into the background and the people came closer and I could read the expressions on their faces. And the Lord communicated to me in this dream that He was going to take away communism for a season and give people freedom so they could hear the gospel and so they could have a chance of coming to know Him. And this time is now coming to an end. And anyway, as a result of that, guys, this is, I've shared some dreams with you, or at least one dream about the Biden army, right? I have shared a dream with you, and I'm sharing this with you to tell you that when God has spoken to me in dreams and I've obeyed these things, they've come to pass. So, like I say, you do with this what you need to do, but this is what happened when I went all in with Jesus, and so ended up going the first year behind the Iron Curtain in 1985. And the first time I went to Romania, Bulgaria, Yugoslavia, Hungary. And the first time I went, I did not go as a Bible smuggler or anything like that. I just went to try to make friendship contacts. Okay. And I remember we were there on the Black Sea at this city in Bulgaria. And this is 4 years, this is behind the Iron Curtain, but 4 years before the democratic changes came about. And I went to two churches. One was a registered church, a legal church. That would be the equivalent to like a 501c3 church if you live in the United States. And then I also went to an underground church where it was illegal to meet and people had to go there in secret and file in intervals so they because they were being watched so that, you know. And then even in the underground church, we knelt on the floor and all the glass windows were taped with newspaper. And we had there was a television actually turned up to make noise so they couldn't hear what we were doing. I mean, that's how it was back then. But anyway, from the registered church, after that, some people in the church invited us over to their home. So we went there, my wife and I and our oldest daughter, and had fellowship. And After that, like the next day, that family was raided by the secret police. Their house was turned upside down. They were terrorized. And after that, I realized that let's make the focus here, rather than making friendship contacts, rather support the underground church over there. So that's what I did for 1985, 6, 7, 8, and 89, until the revolution happened in Romania. So I'm just going to take you back there a little bit and talk about the condition of things during this period of darkness. And I'm gonna talk about Romania right now. And then in another video, I'll talk about Bulgaria. I'll also talk about Macedonia. I'll talk about Albania too. And but here, let me talk about Romania here, because that's kind of where my focus was for quite a long time. And anyway, this was a time when, let me just kind of paint the picture of what it looked like back then. First of all, the country was surrounded by minefields and barbed wire. Okay, they had absolute control of the citizens. They had there were curfews. Okay, I already told you there were registered churches, underground churches. There were curfews. All these communist countries, as I remember it, had a curfew. You couldn't be out on the street past 10 at night without special permissions, or you would get stopped and detained and questioned. And there were, like, you know, checkpoints all along the roads, in, you know, on the outskirts of cities, you know, on highways and stuff. And they would frequently, I mean, routinely stop and check people's papers and all that kind of stuff. And it was a total surveillance state. Now, I'm characterizing what it was like back then, because I'm starting to see as we are in a failed state environment here in the United States, we're in a failed state environment. We have been taken over by communist revolutionaries. They're in the White House. Like I said, you go to www.antifa.com, it redirects to whitehouse.gov. These are communist revolutionaries, and they are in working in tandem with the World Economic Forum, who also, as I said, what's his name? Klaus Schwab. Herr Klaus has a bust of Vladimir Lenin in his office there. So, and also we know that many of the governors and, of course, the Biden administration are really owned by the Chinese. So we are being sold out. There's a Trojan horse in our country here. And there is so much going on. But I want to approach it from this perspective. So there were curfews everywhere, meaning you couldn't be out at night past 10. Now, this is a hallmark of a failed state, curfews. In California, where I live, Gavin Newsom tried to institute curfews about 2 years ago. He tried it and it didn't work. And those of us in New California State, we protested. We were against it because we saw what was happening. His reason for the curfews was that he reasoned that people are out there spreading COVID between 10 p.m. at night and like 8 o'clock in the morning. That's when they're spreading the COVID. And those of us that just didn't, come on. You mean they're not spreading it like in the daytime when people are out there really contacting each other? So what was really going on there? What was really going on there was they are constructing the architecture of a surveillance state, of a totalitarian communist dictatorship. And by the way, if you like communism, if you're one of those out there that like communism, you're going to love the Mark of the Beast, and you're going to love this surveillance system. Because that's what they're erecting. That's what they're actually constructing right now. Even though you can't see it, remember the Joe Biden's executive order of September 12th, I think it was, where he is funding a quote-unquote a bio-economy. And this comes after he has made a multi-billion dollar commitment to genomic surveillance. Can you see where this is headed, guys? I want you to be prepared for this. In the communist world, there were curfews everywhere. And that's what they've been, they're going to revisit this. Trust me on this. They're going to come back to it. And they're going to try to, you will be surprised what they will try to get away with wartime powers. And I want you to think about that. So surveillance. So they jammed, back in the communist world, they jammed all the television and radio signals coming into their countries. I mean, surveillance, followed all the time, spied on all the time. Eavesdropped on. I mean, sometimes it was very obvious, but I always knew I was being spied upon. They had fake currency. Yeah, they did. They had, just like we do today, right? That's why I'm trying to show so many similarities. Fake currency. So all their currency was fake. It wasn't real, meaning it was never legally allowed to have true price discovery. So they had price controls. And you're going to see the Biden administration, you're going to see probably the Western countries do this as things unwind very quickly. The next thing they always resort to are price controls and rationing. Add to that your social credit score, and you're getting into the bioeconomy here. The currency back then, you know, in Romania, it was lei. That's the currency over there, lei. And L-E-I. And they had an official exchange rate, but it wasn't real. It was fake. So you could get so many lei for a U.S. dollar, right, at the official exchange booth. But if you went on the black market, you could get way more, you know, lei for your dollar. So this type, when you have a fake currency, it creates real markets, but those are the underground markets. And by the way, God, do you think God has something to say about almost everything? God has something to say about fake weights and measures. And any country that has fake currency, it's a false weight and a false measure, and that displeases God. It's not right. So back then, they had abductions, they had assassinations, they had persecution of political enemies, they had show trials, and I could probably go on and on. Everything was rationed. The shelves were always empty, and they had special stores that you could go to if you were either in the political class or if you were a foreigner, because they wanted your hard currency. Back then, we called it hard currency, like a dollar, a Deutschmark, you know. So that is where we seem to be headed here, guys. And I'm going to tell you, I could spend hours and hours talking about just Romania and just those years, but I'm going to summarize and say, I'm going to tell you something that happened and how history changed. In my view, the real, when changes really started to occur, you know, we had the Solidarity movement in Poland, and we had, you know, they had the Perestroika and the Glasnost over in Soviet Union. And then they had the Berlin Wall came down, but the real change that caused all the dominoes to fall was the revolution in Romania, because the persecution, the tyranny in Romania was like way worse than in East Germany. It was one of the worst. Albania was definitely the worst, but like Romania, Bulgaria, these places were very, very oppressed. And so I want to tell you something. The last time I went in there before the revolution happened, one of the last memories I have is meeting with a pastor in one of the major cities in Romania. And I asked him, I said, brother, how can, you know, this is after delivering some Bibles we'd smuggled in and stuff like that. And we'd also bring like vitamins and things like this, because especially if you were a Christian and you were getting persecuted there, you know, you were probably malnourished and your children, you know, you couldn't get a job. Can you recognize some of the things here, guys? If you don't obey the government, if you don't have like the right type of vaccine passport or whatever, you can't get a job. So this is the type of thing they've tried to foist upon us. And but like I say, be ready when they try it again with new wartime powers, because that seems to me is where we're headed. Anyway, so I asked him, I said, brother, tell me how we can be praying for you guys as a church in the West. And you know what he said? He said, now, by the way, the dictator's name of that country, Nicolae Ceaușescu, and his wife, Elena. He said, pray like this. Ask the people in America to pray like this. Pray that Nicolae Ceaușescu will be driven out of the capital city and that he will eat grass. And that sounds very strange, unless you understand, you know, the biblical history. There was a guy named Nebuchadnezzar, and he became proud, and he was a ruler, and God judged him, and he was driven out of the city and lost his mental faculties, his cognitive abilities. This was a sign of God's judgment. And he actually ate grass like a cow. And then in his case, the Lord restored to him. What ended up happening is he repented, and he acknowledged that it's God's kingdom, not his kingdom. And he was restored to his position of power and influence. Anyway, so that was the last time I remember meeting with the Romanian Christians before the revolution happened. So then I happened to be back in America. It was December of 1989. And I was praying like that. I was praying, Lord, let Nikolai Ceausescu be driven out of the Capitol and eat grass. And I asked other people to join in that prayer too. Well, there it was in December of 1989, and real time, I watched it on TV, the revolution broke out. It all started, and I want to point this out too, for those who think that a new state can't emerge or that existing states can't fail, I'm telling you, in my short lifespan, I've seen new countries come about. And so I guess God's given me an extra measure of faith where to me it's not so outlandish to see the birth of a new California because I've seen it. I've seen nations collapse and I've seen God raise up new nations in their place. And so, I'm going to exercise that measure of faith that I have too, by the way. And so anyway, there was a, and look how God used the church to bring about this change that set a whole country free. I'm going to just tell this story real quick here. Back then, like I said, there were curfews. There was a church in one of the western cities in Romania, Timișoara. And it's a major city, and it's on the Hungarian border. And there was a church there of, mostly it was composed of ethnic Hungarians. And the pastor's name is Laszlo Tokas. And he had been arrested before, right? And everybody knew he was going to get arrested by the Securitate, the state security police, secret police, again. And the way the communists do this is they arrest people in the middle of the night. And sometimes they just disappear them. But the people in the church said, we, and this was very courageous, I can't emphasize this enough, they said, we are not going to allow our pastor to be arrested without witnesses. At least then they'll either have to arrest us, kill us, or at least we'll know about it. We're not going to let him get abducted in the middle of the night. And so what the people in the church did, and this church building was located like 300 or 400 meters, I want to say, from the town square, which is a beautiful cobblestone town, you know, old European town square, right? And just like 300 or 400 meters away was this church building. And there it was, 10 o'clock at night, curfew, everybody's got to be off the street. I mean, it's like they rolled up the sidewalks. The only people out were like police and military, you know, type of thing. And so the people in the church did a candlelight vigil, absolutely unheard of and illegal. Okay, so they formed a candlelight vigil. By the way, that sounds like a small thing, you know, but they were actually risking their lives by doing that. And the first night, everybody was watching, all the non-Christians, all the people were watching. Wow, and they're not getting arrested. And they were amazed at the courage of these Christians, because anybody could just get abducted back then and killed. And after a few days, they noticed that nobody was getting arrested. Well, it turns out the dictator, Nicolae Ceausescu, happened to be in Libya at the time. And if there's one thing you can learn, I'll tell you about dictatorships, is they're, although in one sense it appears they have a very strong command structure, it's also very weak at the same time. Because the people under the dictator typically are afraid to take action. Because if they take the wrong action, it could be off with your head, right? This is why, for instance, in World War II, when the Allies invaded Normandy on D-Day, they were afraid to act on their own. They couldn't take the initiative, the Germans. They didn't want to wake Adolf Hitler up because they were afraid he'd go into a tantrum and then, you know, and then get killed. So anyway, this was kind of like that. The people were afraid to do anything without, when a dictator was off in another country, hobnobbing with Muammar Gaddafi. And so what happened was they had remember I said all the TV signals from other countries were blocked, but they had like a state-run media. Does that also sound familiar, guys? State-run media? Because we've got it. And I'm talking about CNN, NPR, all the letter networks, they're all controlled by the government. Yep. I have that on good authority. So, yes, so they had that back then. It's just that our propaganda here is much more convincing than theirs. Sometimes I would ask the people, how do you guys get any information? How do you perceive what's happening in the world outside? And they said, oh, we listen to our news and then we just believe the exact opposite. That's how it was back then. And the protests, so in Timișoara, so what happened was all the non-Christians started to, you know, they were observing these people are not getting arrested. So they came out one by one, and then by dozens, and then by hundreds. And they filled the town square, that cobblestone town square there, and with candles. And they started protesting, totally unheard of in the communist world. And they started chanting. You know what they were chanting? They were chanting, "We want bread. We want bread. We want bread." And guys, we are headed right now for a world where food becomes scarce. And I want you to think about it. The reason I'm telling you this stuff is I want you to draw some parallels and at the type of tyranny that is arising in our own midst here. Anyway, so they started chanting, "We want bread." Well, then that protest was televised, and they didn't control the broadcasting. So the people in other cities all of a sudden started doing the same thing. Candlelight, but a protest broke out in Bucharest, in Cluj, in Arad, Aradia, all the other major cities. Similar protests broke out, and things got way out of control. And so what happened was that the people, the power structure that was there in Romania, they got on the telephone with Nicolae Ceaușescu, and they said, "What should we do? It's getting the protests have spread all across the country." And he gave the order to send in the army with tanks and shoot the protesters. And they did. They rolled in the tanks into Timișoara, and they mowed down a whole town square full of people, men, women, and children. And people told me that there were even mothers holding up their babies, like, "Don't shoot," because the soldiers, that's like their sons, you know? But they did. They killed everybody. And then they, in the middle of the night, they put them all in garbage trucks and took them off and buried them in a mass grave. Well, guess what? After that, I'm kind of moving quicker here because I want to cover a few more things here. So after that, the army repented. And they said, "We are not going to be killing our own people." And they turned the tanks around. And they backed up their tanks and stood with the people. And then the 10-day revolution that broke out was the two sides in that revolution were on one side you had the people and the army standing together. And on the other side, you had the Securitate, which was the secret police. But they also, the army didn't have anything. I mean, they had mixed-matched uniforms and very poor, very, very poor. But the Securitate, they had attack helicopters. They even had mercenaries. Even some mercenaries from Libya came in, and they told me in one city. And they were, in fact, they told me that they would, zip line out of a helicopter, go into the apartment, and kill the family, and then set up sniper, hides and all that. And I mean, this was a horrible revolution, but thank God it only lasted 10 days. But guys, I want to point this out, that the whole catalyst for change, let me just take you back to, and there was actually decades of prayer. I don't want to say it was all about like my prayer, but I joined in a prayer for sure, but praying that the dictator be driven out of the city and eat grass. So what happened was when Nicolae Ceaușescu came back to Romania, he was captured by the army, and they had they put him under a military tribunal. They tried him, and they stood him and his wife up against the wall, and they shot them. That's how freedom came about in Romania. But it all started with prayer. It all started with the church. And I want to, I could go on and on and on. I think I will elaborate on one more story here, guys, on this. And that is that I wasn't there during the revolution, but I did go there probably 2 or 3 months after that. And there were still people fleeing. As soon as the borders opened up, everybody that could tried to leave the country, as refugees. But I want to tell you this one thing. So when I went in there after the revolution, I was delivering some aid. And one of the things we were doing was supporting the first Christian bookstore in Romania. It was in the capital city. It was called Stefanos was the name of the bookstore, and the guy running it was a Christian pastor. I forget his name, but I was meeting with him, and we were in his car driving around a capital city, and all of a sudden, oh, and guess what? The first Christian bookstore in Romania after the revolution, guess what building they used? It was the Securitate headquarters, the secret police headquarters for the whole country. That is where the Christian bookstore was opened up. And God has his, I'm telling you, your faith will change the world. So it is, let me make this point too. So we were driving through the capital city, and all of a sudden, you know, and it's all cobblestone, big wide roads, busy, crazy driving, and all this kind of stuff as you'd expect in a third world country, right? And all of a sudden he stops in the middle of the road, and just we're there parked, all this traffic going by around us, and he starts weeping. And I said, "Are you okay?" And he goes, "I just have to tell you," he says. I said, "What's the matter?" He says, that so many years ago, he says, "I was right on this location under this street in a prison cell, like three stories underground. And the dictator's wife, Elena Ceausescu, came to him in his prison cell and said, 'If you cooperate with us and spy for us, we'll get you out of here.' And he wouldn't do it. And he said, I wouldn't do it, and I suffered for it. But now, look where they are, and look what the beautiful things that God is doing right now." So guys, I'm going to wrap this video up, but I wanted to speak more about the relationship with God from an objective standpoint of the Bible is the Word of God. It is true. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And there's all this, also this subjective part of, which is your own walk with the Lord. And so I want to encourage you today, guys, so to get out of the, you know, so Jesus said that you are the salt of the world. But if the salt loses its saltiness, it's good for nothing except to be trampled underfoot by men. And I hate to say it, but this country, we have made our children pass under the knife. We've lost the salty influence that we did have at one time. I'm not saying everybody, but by and large, it's a fair statement. Our country's been taken over, and this is the element that has taken it over. And so guys, the axe is laid at the root. And one thing about the axe being laid at the root is when the tree gets cut down, it could start growing again, but it's going to have to start from the root. And that's the foundation that we need to get back to. And we need to remember from where we have fallen. Guys, so I'm going to encourage you today to get out of the salt shaker and into the world with your faith. So God loves you guys. And please like, share, subscribe. And pray that I'll be able to make more videos. God bless you guys. Thank you.